Good morning. My name is Grady Smith, and as Noah mentioned, one of the ministers on staff here at Northeast. And so on behalf of the leadership here at Northeast, all the members, if you're a guest with us this morning, we want to extend a special welcome to you and thank you for taking the time for being with us. Those of you who are joining us online, we thank you for that as well and encourage you when you get an opportunity to try to be here with us in person. I understand that there are some people because of health issues and some other situations, they're unable to come. But when you are here and you get to experience that worship and hear that singing, and I will tell you quite frankly as well, this is the best spot to sit if you want to just get the full effect of the singing. So generally, I don't know, the last couple of years, Jeannie and I used to always sit up here when I was preaching all the time, and now we're sitting back there most of the time, and I really do miss those acoustics right here. Mike, Amber, is that why you're sitting right there? Or you just want to be closer to me? Yeah? Both. Okay. That's very sweet of you. We're talking about greetings this morning, and you couldn't read that scripture or go along with the scripture reading this morning and not know that's what we're talking about. And I tell you what, there's a tendency to do at times with a passage like this one from Romans 16. There is a tendency to say, now we've gotten through the good stuff, you know, the doctrine and the theology and, you know, some of the practical application. And then you come to the end of a book like Romans, or you look at the same in 1 Corinthians, and it's all, you know, they say hi and this one says hi, and then you go through all these names. And there's a tendency, I'm not saying that's how you're thinking about this, but we're the good stuff has already been said, and now we're just kind of wrapping up. But a greeting is important. You think about how many times this day already you've greeted someone. Some of you may have already greeted dozens of people since you've been here. And how we go about greeting others is just one of those things that we can't just look lightly upon, because obviously it's important here in Romans 16. And if we were to continue reading some of the past, I'm not going to read it all, but you go down to Romans 16 and it says in verse 21, Timothy, my fellow worker, sends his greetings to you, as do Lucius and Jason and Sosipater, my relatives. I, Tertius, who wrote down this letter, greet you in the Lord. Gaius, whose hospitality I and the whole church here enjoy, sends you his greetings. Erastus, who is the city's director of public works, and our brother Quartus send you their greetings. So many different ways we can greet others. And I hope if you are a guest here this morning at Northeast that you have felt warmly welcomed by your experience here. Because, you know, while a greeting is kind of perfunctory and it's what you do in polite society, it does send a message. And when you greet someone, whatever the context is, you are saying to that person, I recognize you, I see you, you are important. I recognize you are there. And so in languages all around the world, there are so many different ways to greet somebody. And of course, we have our common hello, which is just a greeting. You know, it's hola in Spanish and hallo in German. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but H-A-L-L-O in German, ciao. And I even looked up how to greet somebody in Mandarin Chinese, so I went up to Martha this morning, Martha Yatino over here, and I said, ni hao, ni hao. And she knew exactly what I was saying. And there are the Givens back there. They ministered into, are you impressed that I took the time to learn that? Every culture, every language, Bible times today, they're just almost always accepted greetings in terms of how you do that. And sometimes we think about it, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's just kind of perfunctory and just kind of what we do, and we go up to somebody and we say, how you doing? And then there's the obligatory, I'm fine. Most of the time we ask that, we're not really wanting someone to take the time to give us a 10-minute update on how their life is doing. And that's neither good or bad, because we need to do that, whatever the context might be. But I purposely, at times, some people today asked me, how you doing? And I thought, well, I'm doing this sermon, so I need to be creative in how I respond to this, you know. But I kind of do it anyway. Sometimes people will ask me, how you doing? And I'll say something like, better than I deserve. Because I don't want to just say the, I'm fine. I'm fine thing. And that confuses people when I say that. And then they think you stole that from, who's the money guy? Dave Ramsey. And I will tell you right now, I started that term back when I was like, so Dave Ramsey stole that from me. I was saying that before Dave Ramsey did. But the fact that we're just even thinking about it and talking about this reminds us that how we greet others, depending on the context and the situation, does really matter. In Thailand, when you greet someone, you fold your hands and you say, Sawadee. That's one of the things I learned when I've been to Thailand 3 times. And then if you're a man, you say, Sawadee Krup. And if you're a woman, you say, Sawadee Ka. And if you are greeting someone who is older than you, it is common to bow your head as a gesture of respect for those who are older. But all of us know and understand, depending on if we're in a foreign country and we don't know how to do certain things, or we're in a certain setting, what do? How do we say it? And so I don't know if you're like the people in this elevator right here. What do you do? What do you do when you get into an elevator? Todd, what do you do when you get into an elevator? You acknowledge, that does not surprise me from you. So how many, be honest, how many of you get into an elevator and you just kind of walk over into the corner and just kind of do this? Okay, come on, tell me, how many of you do that? Some of you do that. You don't necessarily feel obligated to greet somebody. Now, unlike Jeannie, she's in children's worship right now. One of the traits I appreciate so much about Jeannie is she will always find a way to communicate with somebody when she is in their presence. And that's even strangers. We can be out riding our bikes, and we have helmets. They're really cool. They're meshed together. So Jeannie and I can talk to each other while we're out riding our bikes. And we will pass somebody on the road, and I might nod to them, but Jeannie feels like she has to make some kind of comment to them about their situation. So if they're walking a dog, Jeannie, I'll hear her, in my mesh intercom, I'll hear her say, "Oh, that's a cute dog." Or she'll see somebody walking down the road with a small child, and she'll say something like, "That's such a cute little child." And I appreciate that in her, because I tend to be, even though I consider myself an extrovert, I don't necessarily feel compelled to say something in every given situation. But the greeting is important. It's important in a church context. How many of you remember back when we did the greeting here at Northeast, and we asked everybody to stand up and find somebody you don't know and greet them and welcome them, all right? I'm going to ask another survey here. How many of you just loved that? Just raise your hand. How many of you just loved it? I see three hands in the very back and a hand over there. Okay. Four of you loved it. And how many of you did not like it? Raise your hand, be honest. Yeah. And statistics bear that out. And so for years here at Northeast, not only were our people not comfortable doing that, but we were asking people who are guests here to do the same thing. And studies show that that's a big no-no, and so we discontinued doing it. So we discontinue doing that, but at the same time, you want your guests to feel comfortable and greeted and welcome. There's a fine line there. But we can certainly see from Romans 16, and just the way things are stated, it is more than a formality. It's more than just being customary. There is something impactful with a greeting and acknowledging somebody's presence and interacting with them as they're doing here. And while we may say something that's the appropriate thing, at the same time, we also know that, you know, behind that greeting, there's not necessarily sincerity in that greeting. It's just perfunctory. I think about Jesus. And when he was betrayed at the end of his life, you remember when Judas negotiated with some of the Jewish rulers to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And as he's negotiating that arrest, he says, you know, when we go up there, the one I kiss is the one that is the man you need. And so they arrested him is when Judas came up to Jesus. You remember that there in that setting. And then Jesus asked Judas, "Judas, do you betray me with a kiss?" A common greeting back in that day, just like saying to someone grace and peace, was a common greeting. Or if you had a Jewish background or heritage, saying shalom was a common greeting. But obviously, you can greet somebody and not have the right heart behind it. And so you come to this passage. And in this passage in Romans 16, as Paul talks about all these greetings, he says in verse 16, "Greet one another with a holy kiss. All the churches of Christ send their greetings." So not only is he including individuals in this greeting, this entire chapter is mainly greetings, but he's talking about local churches, and most of those were house churches where people that went to a certain location, perhaps in a home, a house church, they were sending greetings to all the other churches that were in the area as well. Paul is saying to them here, listen, even though this is a common greeting, and you can go to places right now in the Middle East or in Europe and in some context here in the United States, and you might get a kiss. And usually it's like a kiss. But, you know, we have all kinds of different comfort levels when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I also understand that I don't think we necessarily have to look at this and say, well, Paul is demanding that when we greet each other, we literally greet each other with a holy kiss. It was a cultural way to greet. And what Paul is saying to them is when you greet each other, it's just, don't think of it like just any kind of greeting. Because who you are and who you are in relationship to each other is important. I guess if you want to go around giving kisses to people, strangers, I don't know if I should say more power to you, because I'm sicking you on all these people that don't want to be kissed, you know. Cedric tells me about a sister down where he grew up in the Church of Alabama, and Cedric and his family would pick up Sister Buford. They pick her up every Sunday, and it became clear to Cedric that all of those Sundays, she was going to find as many people as she could and give them a holy kiss. And Cedric eventually found ways to kind of stay away from Sister Buford, because he didn't want that holy kiss. But that it just gets to the point that will remind us that it's not just in this kind of setting, but the things we say to each other is a reminder to each other how important someone else is and how important we are to them. Very still common in the South, especially in rural churches, to address each other as brother and sister. You know, how many of you have noticed that in the last 40 or 50 years, there's a lot less of that? But when I was growing up in the South and I worked at a rural church as a youth minister for a couple of years, I mean, almost everybody called each other brother and sister so-and-so. And I understand it's kind of a formality, but there is something to that. Brother Noah. And I'm not saying we necessarily have to go back to that, but it's not a little thing, and it does have something that's related to the greeting. And we all do it different ways. If you want a great hug, find John Amundsen. Is John here this morning? He's not here. He's forsaking the assembly, I guess, this morning. Somebody find out where John is, okay? You know, if you want a firm handshake, find Tom Spar. Not Tom Spar, Tom Mingus, I'm sorry. Tom Spar is a former member who had a firm handshake. Tom Mingus, where are you, Tom Mingus? Sometimes he'll just squeeze the fire out of your hand. I think he does it just to kind of prove how strong he is. Gary Clasby, same way. And then you have some that'll, you know, find you and want to hug you, and, you know, you don't want to hug them. That's not the point. The point is, when we come together, even if it's in a casual way, what we say to each other and how we recognize each other is a very important thing. And so are the names. So many names. And he lists all of these people by name. And names are important. I've made this point with you before, that the better we can be about trying to learn and remember each other's names goes a long way in helping in this whole process of fellowship. And I know I've heard from some of you, and I don't remember things as well now as I used to. I just have to admit, I've always thought I've been pretty good with names, but the older I've gotten, the more it's like I have to even think of the name of somebody I know pretty well every now and then. You know, in fact, this year is the first year I had that age 65 physical. A couple of months, you know how that goes, don't you? So I go in there and the nurse, you know, starts talking to me, and then out of the blue, she says, there's three words I want you to remember. I want you to remember, I want you to remember nation, river, finger. And I thought, oh, nation, river, finger. Can't forget. They're going to think I'm losing my mind if I don't remember this. But then she started talking and, you know, took my blood pressure and did several other things. And then just out of the blue, 5 minutes later, she said, what are those three words? And I almost froze. But thankfully, I remembered. But when it comes to names, it's not when somebody remembers your name. What do you notice about that? Do you notice it when somebody remembers your name? And maybe it's somebody you wouldn't expect to remember your name. You're experiencing a kind of warmth and a welcome and a greeting. It's saying you matter. You're important. And in this passage, some of these names are very familiar. You have Priscilla and Aquila, who came from Rome and then went to Corinth. They spent some time in Ephesus. You read about them in various letters. Paul had a close relationship with them when you read about that in the book of Acts. Timothy, who was converted in the early part of Paul's second missionary journey, a young man, Jewish mother, Gentile father, traveled with him, very important part of his ministry, wrote letters to him, sent him on missions. These are names we're familiar with. Gaius, the word Gaius, it appears several times in the New Testament. In fact, three different individuals referred to in the New Testament have the name Gaius, this being one of them, a man who was a leader in the church at Corinth, who Paul baptized. You read about that in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. But we have some names we're not so familiar with, a lady named Phoebe, who is being recommended by Paul to the church at Rome as she traveled and has been an important part of his ministry. Some translations do translate that as deacon, and when you read that, you might have thought, oh man, that's interesting. Actually, it is a word that's translated deacon, but it's also the word that is translated servant and used generically as well. So when you're translating, you have to decide in what way it's being used. But it is possible that she may have been, you know, serving others, maybe, you know, older women in a ministry. You read about these women in 1 Corinthians 7 who serve other women. I'm not 100% sure on that. And then you get Tertius. And Tertius, at the end of this letter, he has been Paul's secretary. And so he takes the time, as he's listening to the words of Paul and writing them down, he says, I, Tertius, who have written this letter, I want to send you my greetings as well. And then you have somebody named Erastus. There's a couple of Erastuses. That's probably the wrong way to say that. In the New Testament, but this one is mentioned as a government official. And this is totally, really doesn't have that much to do with this lesson. It's a little side parenthesis. But if you go to Corinth, and I had the opportunity, my 25th anniversary here at Northeast, the elders made a decision to send me on a trip to Greece with a group of preachers and ministers, and it was such a great trip. And one of the stops we made was ancient Corinth, and a picture that I took, and this is not my photograph. My photograph was not as good as this one that somebody else took, but there's a place in ancient Corinth with an inscription that says, Erastus, proconsul city manager, laid this at his own expense. And this is dated to around the time that this Erastus that Paul is talking about here in Romans 16 would have been present. So it's very likely that this is an inscription of somebody that we're reading about in Romans 16. Anybody else find that interesting? I think it is. But going deeper than that, and we're calling this lesson more than a greeting. Beyond that, listen to the way that Paul describes different people that were a part of the body of Christ in Corinth and in Rome. Paul was in Corinth when he wrote the book of Romans. And so there would have been people. He said he calls them fellow workers or a dear friend. I love in the Lord. Several times in Romans 16, you find this statement, in the Lord. I love them in the Lord. They've been like a mother to me. I can think of people here at Northeast through the years who've been like parents to me. And I think it's good to, and then the term brothers is probably one of the more common ones there. So Paul is talking about all these relationships, and he's describing them in all these different ways. But you also recognize in this same chapter, as he talks about these people, he talks about what they're doing. And so whether you're talking about Phoebe, who was a great help to many, or you're talking about Aquila and Priscilla, who risked their lives for me, or several others who are described as working very hard, or they worked hard in the Lord, or Gaius, he showed hospitality. Others have stood the test of being challenged and dealing with difficulties, and they've been found faithful. All these different ways to describe people in terms of what they're doing. So it's certainly more than a greeting. These disciples, I came up with these five words. Noah, this would be a good sermon series right here for you, these 5 points, okay? They were connected, they were concerned, they were involved. They were helpful, or the term is used, servant, and it's clear that they were impactful in what they did. I have the title of being the involvement minister here at Northeast. That's my new title, and I'll have it for another, eight or nine months, and then I'm just like a regular old Joe after that, right? I am the involvement minister, and I'll tell you, I shared with the staff, I wasn't always completely happy. What's your new title going to be? I kind of liked, chief senior awesome minister, something like that. But I got relegated to involvement minister. But that's a lot of what I'm doing, and I'm glad I'm doing it because I think it's important. How connected, how involved, how relevant we are in the context of the body of Christ. This is what I want us to be. This is what I want you to be. And we should feel the same thing about each of us, right? This is what we want to be. And so we ask the question, well, how are we doing at Northeast? I've done some extensive digging and research, and I came up with a master list of every member here at Northeast. And I looked at the involvement, what people are doing, and what they're involved in and what they're not. And I am happy to say that here at Northeast, 70% of our members are doing something beyond just coming to worship on Sunday morning and then that's about it. That's, all the contact, all the involvement. Then among that 70%, we have some people who are doing 5, 6, 7, 10 things. I'll tell you, if that's you, you're doing too much. All right, and then some two or three, in addition to worship, they're coming on Wednesday night, or they're involved in a service project, or they do life group. 70% of our church, and I think that's very, very healthy. And then we have about 5% who are kind of pretty much off the grid for various reasons. And within that 25%, you have several who are shut-ins. They may watch us online, but they don't have much contact beyond that. I think we're doing pretty well. But like with anything, I think we can also grow and stretch and do some things differently. And I certainly don't want this to come across like, in the old days, if you were considered a faithful member, like a really faithful member, what did you do? Can somebody tell me? Sunday night, Wednesday night, and Sunday morning. I mean, that was like, you were faithful. And when we were talking about people, that's the kind of language we would use. But it's possible to do all those things and not be faithful in the sense ultimately that God calls us to be faithful, because he doesn't call us to look at all these things like we're punching a time clock and I have to go to this, and if I don't go to church, it's going to be a bad thing. He wants us to look at it differently, such as the angle of every member is important. Every member has a role. Every member is needed. And so you may be a shut-in at home and you may not be able to get out, but I'll tell you, I've known lots of shut-ins through the years here at Northeast who did an awful lot of ministry from where they were, through calls or cards or letters or emails. So I'm not saying everybody has to do the same thing. And one thing I've asked you before, this is in a couple of years ago, I may ask this in a sermon. I asked the question, what if everybody at Northeast was like me? What kind of church would we have at Northeast if everybody was like me? And I didn't ask you that from the standpoint of, obviously, if a person's a shut-in, they can't get out or they have other issues. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the commitment to this body, an interest in this body. Paul in Ephesians 4 talks about the functioning of the body, and he makes a statement in the, I think it's the 16th verse, he says, where each part does its work. So there is a place for you, and you are needed and you are important. And what can we all do? Very quickly, as I make some quick application here. One thing we can all do is pay attention. And what I mean by that is take advantage of times and situations and contexts when we are together already. And so when you come on Sunday morning and you're looking around, look for somebody you may not know or somebody who maybe seems... Now, they may be the kind of person who has the attitude, I don't want you to talk to me and I don't want you to bother me. And you may find that out. But even just looking at somebody in the eye and nodding and smiling, I know it's a little thing, but those little things add up, don't they? Look at the person next to you right now. I want you to look right now at the person next to you. I want you to say, I'm glad you're here. Now, that wasn't so hard, was it? We can do that. We can do that in so many different ways. Paying attention by trying to learn names. We have a pictorial directory, and we're trying to get those of you who don't mind having your picture on a database that other members can look at. We have an online pictorial directory. We're trying to get more of you to get your picture made so that when we all go to the pictorial directory, it will help us learn each other's names better. A little thing, but it's not a little thing. And I know we used to have the name tags. I love those name tags because it really did help you learn people's names. But logistically, it was a nightmare. Little things can make a difference. Paying attention to who's here and who's not here. And I think it's great when we sit, we usually sit in the same area. We need to think about those people we haven't seen in a while or contacted in, or we haven't seen them. They're kind of on the fringes. And think about, you know, what can I do to reach out to them? Little things. And I think as well, the importance of recognizing and encouraging each other in the things that we do is a little thing. But that's what Paul's doing here in Romans 16. He's spending a whole chapter doing that, talking about what people are doing in the kingdom, and he's mentioning them by name. So we can take the time to go up to somebody and thank them for what they are doing. Whether it's a card or a note, because we have so many people volunteers doing so many things that make this happen. I think we have a great staff at Northeast. We have a great eldership. The eldership sets the pace because they are very involved here in every way. But to let folks know, I appreciate you for doing that. Paul did it. Paul did it all the time. So what's your next step? It depends on who you are. The purpose of this sermon is not to make those of you who are already doing tons of things in the church. And if there's something to be done, you just sign. There are those people that sign up for everything and do everything. This is not to make you feel bad about it, you know. You know, we have food and fellowship, you know, coming up. And I'm all for food and fellowship. Check your bulletin. You'll be getting an email this week from me. But not everybody can do that any more than everybody can do primetimers. We had 36 people this week at our first kickoff primetimers event. And I told those folks, I said, look, I don't want this to be viewed like this is just something else you have to do on top of the five things you're already doing. But everybody on some level and in some way needs to get connected and involved. And this is one of the ways to do it. And we have tons of these here at Northeast. There's so many opportunities in a smaller group setting to get to know people and develop relationships. Whether it's food and fellowship or whether it's something else, there are things that we can do, including ways to serve. And this is a slide. I'm almost done. This slide is one of the slides we show at our guest open house. So if you're a guest here and you've been to our guest open house, you've seen this slide. And we try to let folks know when they're exploring Northeast, whether they end up placing membership or not, that there's a way for you to get plugged in and there's a way for you to serve. And this is not an exhaustive list. There's probably double or more things that you can get involved in. And so I'm just asking you to consider to stretch, to do something different. If you've never explored a small group option or setting, think about that. There are blessings in doing that. I think of the hospitality team. Chad's not here this morning. But right now, you can use your phone. Where's my phone? I'm almost done. I've got about 35 minutes. I'm about done. I'm not gonna preach. Where is that? I saved it this morning. Now this is where, okay, I'm just being like Grady up here right now, okay? I wish I was more polished. I wish I was smoother. But right now, you use this QR code in front of you. You click on that QR code, and it takes you to a place where it's next steps. And at this next steps place, you can sign up for ladies, Crafter Game Night, the Forge Reds outing, serve at Matthew 25, Vacation Bible School. We need to add food and fellowship to this now. We need to do that this week. But the last thing here, and we will change this periodically, the last thing here is hospitality team. So right now we are looking for a few good people who are friendly, who like to talk to people, who can smile and nod and maybe help somebody find a seat, whether it's being a greeter or an usher or something else related to that. That's a way you can get plugged in and involved. And like I've said before, you don't have to do everything. I don't want this to be about making you feel guilty for not doing, you know, 10 things instead of the 9 things you're doing right now. But I think we can go deeper as well. I'm going to close with this because this is the most important thing. You notice what especially matters to these people who are connected in this way by name in this chapter, it's because of who they are in Jesus. It's Jesus who brings them together. It's Jesus who brings us together. It's Jesus who makes us matter more to each other, because it was even Jesus who said, "By this, all men will know that you're my disciples if you love one another like I've loved you." It's what God can do for you in Jesus. And in that relationship, the relationship you have with all these people in here and in other places as well, matters even more than just being a casual hello or goodbye. Because folks, we're a forever family. We're a forever family. So we want you to let us know if you want to get deeper into talking about what it means to follow Jesus. We want to partner with you on that quest in your life. And it may be at some point you're ready to make a commitment and be baptized into Jesus. We have this baptistry back here. We're ready to use it anytime. Maybe you just need to talk to an elder. Maybe you're like struggling a little bit now, finding the right way to get plugged in. We have shepherds that are in this room back here after worship to meet with you and encourage you. So we encourage whatever way we can help you on that path to let us know. Thank you for being here this morning, and always think about greeting one another in a holy way, because what we have is special. Let's stand and sing.